Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of the third and final volume in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, The Return of the King, by J.R.R. Tolkien, narrated by Robert Inglis. This book is copyrighted 1955-1965 by J.R.R. Tolkien. Copyright renewed 1982-1983 by Christopher R. Tolkien, Michael H.R. Tolkien, John F.R. Tolkien, and Priscilla M.A.R. Tolkien. This work is recorded by permission of Unwin Hyman Limited. This performance is copyrighted 1990 by Recorded Books Incorporated. This is the third and final part of The Lord of the Rings. The first part, The Fellowship of the Ring, told how Gandalf the Grey discovered that the ring possessed by Frodo the Hobbit was in fact the One Ring, ruler of all the rings of power. It recounted the flight of Frodo and his companions from the quiet shire of their home, pursued by the terror of the black riders of Mordor, until, at last, with the aid of Aragorn, the ranger of Eriador, they came through desperate perils to the house of Elrond in Rivendell. There was held the great council of Elrond, at which it was decided to attempt the destruction of the ring, and Frodo was appointed the ring-bearer. The companions of the ring were then chosen, who were to aid him in his quest, to come, if he could, to the Mountain of Fire in Mordor, the land of the enemy himself, where alone the ring could be unmade. In this fellowship were Aragorn and Boromir, son of the Lord of Gondor, representing men. Legolas, son of the Elven King of Mirkwood, for the elves. Gimli, son of Gloin of the Lonely Mountain, for the dwarves. Frodo, with his servant Samwise, and his two young kinsmen, Meriadoc and Peregrine, for the hobbits. And Gandalf the Grey. The companions journeyed in secret far from Rivendell in the north, until, baffled in their attempt to cross the high pass of Carathras in winter, they were led by Gandalf through the hidden gate and entered the vast mines of Moria, seeking a way beneath the mountains. There, Gandalf, in battle with the dreadful spirit of the underworld, fell in a dark abyss. But Aragorn, now revealed as the hidden heir of the ancient kings of the West, led the company on from the east gate of Moria, through the elvish land of Lorien, and down the great river Anduin, until they came to the falls of Rauros. Already they'd become aware that their journey was watched by spies, and that the creature, Gollum, who once had possessed the ring, and still lusted for it, was following their trail. It now became necessary for them to decide whether they should turn east to Mordor, or go on with Boromir to the aid of Minas Tirith, chief city of Gondor, in the coming war, or should divide. When it became clear that the ring-bearer was resolved to continue his hopeless journey to the land of the enemy, Boromir attempted to seize the ring by force. The first part ended with the fall of Boromir to the lure of the ring, with the escape and disappearance of Frodo and his servant Samwise, and the scattering of the remainder of the fellowship by a sudden attack of orc soldiers, some in the service of the Dark Lord of Mordor, some of the traitor Saruman of Isengard. The quest of the ring-bearer seemed already overtaken by disaster. The second part, books 3 and 4, The Two Towers, recounted the deeds of all the company after the breaking of the Fellowship of the Ring. Book 3 told of the repentance and death of Boromir, and of his funeral in a boat committed to the falls of Rauros. Of the capture of Meriadoc and Peregrine by orc soldiers, who bore them towards Isengard over the eastern plains of Rohan. And of their pursuit by Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli. The riders of Rohan then appeared. A troop of horsemen, led by Éomer the marshal, surrounded the orcs on the borders of the forest of Fangorn and destroyed them. But the hobbits escaped into the wood, and there they met Treebeard the Ent, secret master of Fangorn. In his company they witnessed the rousing of the wrath of the tree folk and their march on Isengard. In the meanwhile, Aragorn and his companions met Éomer, returning from the battle. He provided them with horses, and they rode on to the forest. There, while searching in vain for the hobbits, they met Gandalf again, returned from death, now the White Rider, yet veiled still in grey. With him they rode over Rohan to the halls of King Théoden of the Mark, where Gandalf healed the aged king and rescued him from the spells of Wormtongue, his evil counselor, secret ally of Saruman. They rode then with the king and his hosts against the forces of Isengard, and took part in the desperate victory of the Hornburg. Gandalf then led them to Isengard, and they found the great fortress laid in ruins by the tree folk, and Saruman and Wormtongue besieged in the indomitable tower of Orthanc. In the parley before the door, Saruman refused to repent, and Gandalf deposed him and broke his staff, leaving him to the vigilance of the Ents. From a high window, Wormtongue hurled a stone at Gandalf, but it missed him, and was picked up by Peregrine. This proved to be one of the three surviving Palantiri, the Seeing Stones of Numenor. Later, at night, Peregrine succumbed to the lure of the stone. He stole it and looked in it, and so was revealed to Sauron. The book ended with the coming of a Nazgul over the plains of Rohan, a ringwraith mounted on a flying steed, presage of imminent war. Gandalf delivered the Palantir to Aragorn, and taking Peregrine, rode away to Minas Tirith. Book 4 turned to Frodo and Samwise, now lost in the bleak hills of the Emyn Muil. It told how they escaped from the hills and were overtaken by Sméagol, Gollum, and how Frodo tamed Gollum and almost overcame his malice, so that Gollum led them through the dead marshes and the ruined lands to the Morannon, the black gate of the land of Mordor in the north. There, it was impossible to enter, and Frodo accepted Gollum's advice to seek a secret entrance that he knew of, away south in the mountains of Shadow, the western walls of Mordor. As they journeyed thither, they were taken by a scouting force of the men of Gondor led by Faramir, brother of Boromir. Faramir discovered the nature of their quest, but resisted the temptation to which Boromir had succumbed, and sent them forward on the last stage of their journey to Cirith Ungol, the Spider's Pass, though he warned them that it was a place of mortal peril, of which Gollum had told them less than he knew. Even as they reached the crossroads and took the pass to the ghastly city of Minas Morgul, a great darkness issued from Mordor, covering all the lands. Then Sauron sent forth his first army, led by the Black King of the Ringwraiths. The War of the Ring had begun. Gollum guided the hobbits to a secret way that avoided Minas Morgul, and in the darkness they came at last to Cirith Ungol. There Gollum fell back into evil, and attempted to betray them to the monstrous guardian of the pass, Shelob. He was frustrated by the heroism of Samwise, who beat off his attack and wounded Shelob. The second part ends with the choices of Samwise. Frodo, stung by Shelob, lies dead, as it seems. The quest must end in disaster, or Samwise must abandon his master. At length, he takes the ring and attempts to carry on the hopeless quest alone. But just as he's about to cross into the land of Mordor, orcs come up from Minas Morgul and down from the tower of Cirith Ungol that guards the crown of the pass. Hidden by the ring, Samwise learns from the bickering of the orcs that Frodo is not dead, but drugged. Too late, he pursues them, But the orcs carry off the body of Frodo down a tunnel leading to the rear gate of their tower. Samwise falls in a swoon before it as it closes with a clang. This, the third and last part, will tell of the opposing strategies of Gandalf and Sauron until the final catastrophe and the end of the Great Darkness. We return first to the fortunes of battle in the West. And now, the return of the King.
Book 5, Chapter 1, Minas Tirith. Pippin looked out from the shelter of Gandalf's cloak. He wondered if he was awake or still sleeping, still in the swift-moving dream in which he had been wrapped so long since the great ride began. The dark world was rushing by, and the wind sang loudly in his ears. He could see nothing but the wheeling stars, and away to his right vast shadows against the sky, where the mountains of the south marched past. Sleepily he tried to reckon the times and stages of their journey, but his memory was drowsy and uncertain. There had been the first ride at terrible speed without a halt, and then in the dawn he had seen a pale gleam of gold, and they had come to the silent town and the great empty house on the hill. And hardly had they reached its shelter when the winged shadow had passed over once again, and men wilted with fear. But Gandalf had spoken soft words to him, and he had slept in a corner, tired but uneasy, dimly aware of comings and goings, and of men talking and Gandalf giving orders. And then again riding in the night. This was the second, no, the third night since he had looked in the stone, and with that hideous memory he woke fully and shivered, and the noise of the wind became filled with menacing voices. A light kindled in the sky, a blaze of yellow fire behind dark barriers. Pippin cowered back, afraid for a moment, wondering into what dreadful country Gandalf was bearing him. He rubbed his eyes, and then he saw that it was the moon rising above the eastern shadows, now almost at the full. So the night was not yet old, and for hours the dark journey would go on. He stirred and spoke. "Where are we, Gandalf?" he asked.
"In the realm of Gondor," the wizard answered. "The land of Anorion is still passing by."
There was a silence again for a while, then... "What is that?" cried Pippin suddenly, clutching at Gandalf's cloak. "Look, fire, red fire! Are there dragons in this land? Look, there is another!" For answer Gandalf cried aloud to his horse.
"On, Shadowfax! We must hasten. Time is short. See, the beacons of Gondor are alight, calling for aid. War is kindled, see! There is the fire on Armondine, and flame on Aelenach. And there they go speeding west. Nardol, Erelas, Minrimmon, Carlenhad, and the Halaferion on the borders of Rohan."
But Shadowfax paused in his stride, slowing to a walk, and then he lifted up his head and neighed. And out of the darkness the answering neigh of other horses came, and presently the thudding of hooves was heard, and three riders swept up and passed like flying ghosts in the moon and vanished into the west. Then Shadowfax gathered himself together and sprang away, and the night flowed over him like a roaring wind. Pippin became drowsy again, and paid little attention to Gandalf telling him of the customs of Gondor, and how the lord of the city had beacons built on the tops of outlying hills along both borders of the great range, and maintained posts at these points where fresh horses were always in readiness to bear his errand riders to Rohan in the north, or to Belfalas in the south.
"It is long since the beacons of the north were lit," he said, "and in the ancient days of Gondor they were not needed, for they had the seven stones."
Pippin stirred uneasily.
"Sleep again, and do not be afraid," said Gandalf. "For you're not going like Frodo to Mordor, but to Minas Tirith, and there you will be as safe as you can be anywhere in these days. If Gondor falls, or the ring is taken, then the Shire will be no refuge."
"You don't comfort me," said Pippin, but nonetheless sleep crept over him. The last thing that he remembered before he fell into deep dream was a glimpse of high white peaks, glimmering like floating isles above the clouds as they caught the light of the westering moon. He wondered where Frodo was, and if he was already in Mordor, or if he was dead. And he didn't know that Frodo, from far away, looked on that same moon as it set beyond Gondor ere the coming of the day. Pippin woke to the sound of voices. Another day of hiding and a night of journey had fleeted by. It was twilight. The cold dawn was at hand again, and chill grey mists were about them. Shadowfax stood steaming with sweat, but he held his neck proudly and showed no sign of weariness. Many tall men, heavily cloaked, stood beside him, and behind them in the mist loomed a wall of stone. Partly ruinous, it seemed, but already before the night was past, the sound of hurried labour could be heard, beat of hammers, clink of trowels, and the creak of wheels. Torches and flares glowed dully here and there in the fog. Gandalf was speaking to the men that barred his way, and as he listened, Pippin became aware that he himself was being discussed.
"Yea, truly we know you, Mithrandir," said the leader of the men. "And you know the passwords of the seven gates and are free to go forward. But we don't know your companion. What is he? A dwarf out of the mountains in the north? We wish for no strangers in the land at this time, unless they be mighty men of arms in whose faith and help we can trust."
"I will vouch for him before the seat of Denethor," said Gandalf. "And as for valour, that cannot be computed by stature. He's passed through more battles and perils than you have, Ingold, though you be twice his height, and he comes now from the storming of Isengard, of which we bear tidings, and great weariness is on him, or I would wake him. His name is Peregrin, a very valiant man."
"Man?" said Ingold dubiously, and the others laughed. "Man?" cried Pippin, now thoroughly aroused. "Man, indeed not! I am a hobbit, and no more valiant than I am a man, save perhaps now and again by necessity. Do not let Gandalf deceive you."
"Many a doer of great deeds might say no more," said Ingold. "But what is a hobbit?"
"A halfling," answered Gandalf. "Nay, not the one that was spoken of," he added, seeing the wonder in the men's faces. "Not he, yet one of his kindred."
"Yes, and the one who journeyed with him," said Pippin. "And Boromir of your city was with us, and he saved me in the snows of the north, and at the last he was slain defending me from many foes."
"Peace," said Gandalf. "The news of that grief should have been told first to the father."
"It has been guessed already," said Ingold. "For there have been strange portents here of late, but pass on now quickly, for the Lord of Minas Tirith will be eager to see any that bear the latest tidings of his son, be he man or—"
"Hobbit," said Pippin. "Little service can I offer to your lord, but what I can do, I would do, remembering Boromir the Brave."
"Fare you well," said Ingold,
and the men made way for Shadowfax, and he passed through a narrow gate in the wall.
"May you bring good counsel to Denethor in his need, and to us all, Mithrandir," Ingold cried. "But you come with tidings of grief and danger, as is your wont, they say."
"Because I come seldom but when my help is needed," answered Gandalf. "And as for counsel, to you I would say that you are over late in repairing the wall of the Pelennor. Courage will now be your best defence against the storm that is at hand, that and such hope as I bring. For not all the tidings that I bring are evil, but leave your trowels and sharpen your swords."
"The work will be finished ere evening," said Ingold.
"This is the last portion of the wall to be put in defence, the least open to attack, for it looks towards our friends of Rohan. Do you know aught of them? Will they answer the summons, think you?"
"Yes, they will come, but they've fought many battles at your back. This road and no road looks towards safety any longer. Be vigilant. But for Gandalf Stormcrow, you would have seen a host of foes coming out of Anorion and no riders of Rohan. And you may yet. Fare you well, and sleep not."
Gandalf passed now into the wide land before the Ramas Echor. So the men of Gondor called the outwall that they had built with great labor after Ithilien fell under the shadow of their enemy. For 10 leagues or more it ran from the mountain's feet and so back again, enclosing in its fence the fields of the Pelennor, fair and fertile townlands on the long slopes and terraces falling to the deep levels of the Anduin. At its furthest point from the great gate of the city, northeastward, the wall was 4 leagues distant, and there, from a frowning bank, it overlooked the long flats beside the river, and men had made it high and strong. For at that point, upon a walled causeway, the road came in from the fords and bridges of Osgiliath, and passed through a guarded gate between embattled towers. At its nearest point, the wall was little more than 1 league from the city, and that was southeastward. There Anduin, going in a wide knee about the hills of Eminarnen in South Ithilien, bent sharply west, and the outwall rose upon its very brink, and beneath it lay the quays and landings of the Harlond for craft that came upstream from the southern fiefs. The townlands were rich,